Good morning. This is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. And before we proceed any further, I want to thank all those who pledged in support of Talking Animals on or before last Wednesday as part of WMNF's just completed summer fund drive. I didn't quite reach my fundraising goal, but I still can with your help. If you didn't have a chance to donate or would like to donate again, please head to WMNF.org, click on Donate Now, follow the drop-down menu and select TLA-Talking Animals to designate your donation. Any amount is wonderful and much appreciated. Thank you very, very much. Meanwhile, my guest today is Rhonda Eldridge, Executive Director of the Community Pet Project, which provides pet food and other resources to homeless and at-risk communities throughout Hillsborough County. Established in 2017 and functioning as an all-volunteer entity with 501c3 nonprofit status, Community Pet Project has expanded the services and programs it offers while maintaining its focus on assisting the organization's original at-risk and homeless constituencies. Their mission is driven in no small measure by the awareness that for some of these folks, their pets constitute the one thing enabling them to endure a life that can be marked by hope, hopelessness, and despair. Some end up surrendering their pets to shelters because they are unable to provide for the animals. The Community Pet Project seeks to mitigate that surrender scenario and otherwise assist its target clientele with such programs as and services as Food Bank, Veterinary Financial Assistance, Fleece for the Fur Babies, and Warrior Cats of Hillsborough. We'll learn about at least some of these programs and services and more about the Community Pet Project when I speak with Rhonda Eldridge in just a moment here on Talking Animals on WMNF. Meanwhile, coming up later in today's program, I'll talk with Mark Reinfeld, the award-winning vegan chef, educator, and author of numerous books, including Healing the Vegan Way, Plant-Based Eating for Optimal Health and Wellness. He's got some news about some in-person cooking classes he'll be teaching for the first time in many moons. He'll probably have to travel for those, but Mark will also share information about other opportunities, including a virtual vegan cooking workshop coming up later this summer. Learn more about these offerings with Mark Reinfeld. Join us a bit later on the show. Right now, though, let's discuss the Kiwan Community Pet Project with its Executive Director, Rhonda Eldridge, with a reminder that I invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj@wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. Let's welcome Rhonda Eldridge to Talking Animals on WMNF. Good morning, Rhonda.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us today on Talking Animals, in person, no less.
Yes, last time it was over the phone.
Right. Well, last time we spoke, that was about 4 years ago, and it was during the pandemic, so it was all virtual, and on top of that, it was kind of a brief chat, so I'm glad to sort of have a longer time to kind of more of a Community Pet Project today. So in my introduction, I outlined that the Community Pet Project does, and we'll circle back to explore that in greater detail. But let's first touch on its history. Take me back to the beginning. How did it get started?
So originally, we were a division of a local nonprofit rescue, Second Chance Friends. And after about a year, it became clear that the need was too great and the rescue wouldn't be able to sustain it much longer. So they let it go. And then us volunteers created our own nonprofit. So about a year after it was created, we were able to stand on our own.
So you just sort of peeled off from the original home
yes.
base with that rescue.
Yes.
And so it just seemed like financially and otherwise it was just too much for the original rescue to sustain the Community Pet Project as part of an affiliated organization. Is that kind of why you guys peeled off? Or
I believe that's what happened with the rescue. The rescue itself takes on a lot of compassionate care and medically needed animals. And so the funding needed to go to them first.
I see.
And we agreed with that. I mean, this is all about the animals. So the
for
funding
sure.
needed to go to the rescue for
right.
their animals. So it made sense for us to become our own entity.
Right. So then the funding, whatever monies or donations came in, went directly to you and that could
correct.
Help support and even expand your services, I
right.
guess, in that way. So whose idea back at the very beginning was it to focus on at-risk and homeless communities?
It actually started because of Hillsborough County Sheriff's Department and Tampa Police Department. They offer quarterly outreach events to the low income and the homeless, different locations throughout Hillsborough County. And we were invited to attend one time because they were starting to see so many homeless people with pets mm. arriving. So the deputy in charge or the police officer in charge for the Tampa side, they reached out to a friend of theirs who happened to be a local dog trainer. And she reached out to the rescue that she was volunteering with. And that happened to be who I was fostering for.
Okay.
So we said, yeah, let's go. Let's see what happens. And it was probably the most physically, mentally, emotionally exhausting day ever.
That very first day, you mean?
The very first day.
And just because it all was so new? Or
yes.
What else made it so challenging?
We didn't know what to expect.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't know how many animals to expect.
Right.
We didn't understand what needs would have to be met.
Right. So a huge learning curve, sounds like.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Very much so. So we agreed to attend the quarterly outreaches every quarter after that. And then after us giving out food and medical, not medical assistance yet, but dewormers and flea preventative
basic
stuff like that.
Yeah.
After that first year of doing the outreaches, the rescue's like, this is bigger than we anticipated.
Yeah.
I understood. I was kind of running it, and I understood. Because, like I said, the funding needed to go to their compassionate care and their medically needed. And so it made sense for them to step away. We had a year to learn, and we were ready to start on our own.
Yeah. And great for that police officer, or maybe there are others that made the decision, but just saying, hey, look at all these folks that have that are homeless, that have pets. So we gotta get another organization involved too. I mean, it would have been easy to not do that, or someone else might not have had the awareness to say, here's what we could really do to make this so much better.
Right, yeah. Officer Randy Whitley was the officer, the TPD officer.
I'm glad to get an actual shout-out to the person who did that.
She was the Tampa police officer, and Deputy Stephanie Krager is on the Hillsborough County side. So the two of them have basically ran these outreaches and organized them and, you know, just made sure that it was done right. And they have been extremely instrumental in getting us involved and allowing us to be present. And what we've done at the outreaches has expanded as well. So
do those outreaches events still continue to this day?
Yes.
Wow.
Four times
quarterly
a year.
Still?
Hmm?
Still quarterly?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. We just had, I think the first one was in January or February. So the second one will be coming up shortly.
And have people felt at any point over the years, like maybe if we could do the logistics, maybe it should be more often than quarterly, or does quarterly seem about right?
As far as all that goes into it, I think quarterly's
plenty
enough.
Just because it's such a
it may not
massive
be plenty,
undertaking. Yeah.
But it is an undertaking. They end up, Randy, Officer Whitley is not with that the outreaches anymore, but Deputy Krager still is. And she gets, I tell people, if you leave the outreach needing something, you've done yourself a disservice. It provides food, clothing, medical, phones, housing, legal, everything you could possibly need is provided at that outreach.
Wow.
So if you're in need of that and you leave saying, I don't have, then
you didn't do your work. You didn't go down that last aisle.
Correct.
Or whatever, maybe.
Yeah, correct.
Wow, interesting. So at-risk and homeless communities were from the get-go.
Correct.
Kind of the focus.
Yes.
Yeah. And those are communities, obviously, who inherently need extra help, specialized help, really, by their very nature. And I think for various social services and agencies, it's apart from these outreach events, it's often, I think, challenging to assist the homeless just because of the very nature of living without housing. So how does that work? For example, if they're not getting stuff at the outreach thing, but it sounds like it's pivotal. Are there ways to help them, like if there's food that's provided apart from an outreach event, but they may not have a place to store it, for example, if they're currently without any housing? Like how do those things get
for
addressed?
The humans?
For the humans that are getting pet food to go with their, their pets.
Okay. So for the pets, we try to provide just as much as they can carry at that time because they're limited. We're not going to give them a 50-pound bag of dog food.
Sure.
Not because they don't need it, but because they lack the ability to transport it.
Tricky.
Because of COVID, we created a food pantry and free delivery.
Oh, wow.
Twice a month, our all-volunteer drivers go out to anywhere in Hillsborough County and deliver food to those that qualify for our assistance. So
give me an example of where something like that would be delivered, because again, I'm picturing places, people that
Anywhere. Yeah.
Okay.
You give us an address. If you're
have an address?
If you're staying on the sidewalk in front of 7-Eleven on the corner of Bush Boulevard.
Oh, wow. So that constitutes
we'll
an address.
We'll deliver it there if that's where you're at.
So it doesn't have to be an actual place or residence or
a
building or whatever.
It just has to be where we can get you.
Okay. Wow, that's super flexible. And obvious.
No, a lot of them don't do that because a lot of them do have more physical addresses, like, you know, the park or, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, but we can. I mean, if somebody calls up and says they need food at the corner of Bush Boulevard, we'll deliver it. We used to do that in the beginning.
That's super accommodating. Has there been an issue over the years of it gets delivered to the park or that street corner that they designated, and then somehow by bad timing or bad luck or whatever, someone else gets the food before the person it was intended to, or they are there to take delivery, I guess, probably.
They're normally waiting for us because their plea is so desperate that their pets need food.
Yeah.
That they'll wait for us most of the time.
And this might be a good time to talk about something that you just touched on out in the lobby before we came on the air. But for the people who say, why are you going to that much trouble to get food for a dog of a homeless person? I already had a sneak preview on this, but I think seriously, all kidding aside, though, it's an important point to make because you'll explain it much better than I could. So
it is difficult because so many people will look at us and say, you know, homeless people shouldn't have pets. I agree. But I also agree that homeless people shouldn't be homeless. I don't think anybody should be homeless. I think, you know, and that's a whole other issue, but I think people should all have housing at some form or another.
Yeah.
And that housing should allow them to have their pets. We were at a market one time and a lady came up and asked what our mission was. And we were fairly new and we told her, and she was like, oh, well, I don't believe in, you know, homeless people having pets. I wouldn't support this. And I said, okay, what constitutes the reason for this person being homeless? Would that make a difference? And they're like, what do you mean? So I said, what about the lady that's endured domestic abuse violence for 10 years, finally has the guts to leave her husband in the middle of the night, packs up her four little dogs, jumps in her car and takes off, and that's all she has. And she's living in a car with her dogs. Do we take her dogs away from her? She literally, that's the only thing she left with, because obviously that's what mattered to her.
Yeah, she was prioritizing. It was like triage when she left the house in the middle of the night.
So if we take that away from her, what happens? She's already left her home. She's left her family. She's left her husband.
Yeah.
And now we're asking her to leave her best friends.
Yeah.
And the lady is kind of like, oh, I didn't think of that. Or that, what about the drug addict who has burned every bridge in the world while he was using, and now he's clean, and he's been clean for 10 years, but absolutely has no support because of all the bridges he burnt.
Yeah.
All he has is that dog sitting on that street corner with him, and all he wants more than anything is to get his life back in order. Do we take that pet away from him? Because if he's a veteran, he ain't going to make it but a couple weeks or a couple months. Because
without the dog, you mean?
Yeah, because he's lost his best friend.
Right.
There's no reason to wake up. If people would actually sit down and talk to these people and find out the why instead of judging the what, there's always a story.
If we
start listening to stories, we'll learn so much.
Right, and also hopefully if some of us are a bit judgmental initially, hopefully we'll throw that judgmental reaction out the window when we hear the story.
Yeah.
Just like those examples you gave, I think, really attest to. So this is Talking Animals on WNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. If you just tuned in, my guest is Rhonda Eldridge, Executive Director of the Community Pet Project, which provides pet food and other resources to homeless and at-risk communities throughout Hillsborough County. If you have questions for Rhonda or would like to offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663. Email dj@wmnf.org or text 813-433-0885. So we've talked a little bit about the very beginning and how it quickly kind of shifted or fairly quickly shifted from an offshoot of a rescue. So walk me through other parts of the evolution, because you guys have been around about 6-7 years now, I guess, officially, right?
Yeah.
So tell me kind of how it's evolved in some of those subsequent years after the beginning.
Well, in the beginning, it was basically just food. After our first year of being in existence on our own, that December, we were able to provide our first medical case, cover financial assistance for our first medical case. And it was
what
a
was
heart.
What was that?
I remember I was driving to Tampa and the phone rang. And I called the lady back. She had rescued a dog during a hurricane. It had been about a year. She couldn't find the owner. She was looking and trying everything she could. Finally decided she was keeping the dog. She took the dog to the vet, and unfortunately, he was heartworm positive. Mm-hmm. But because of her financial status, she couldn't take care of her disabled child and her pet and herself and another pet.
Wow.
And she's crying on the phone, and she's yelling at me. And she's like, I know you're going to say no. Everyone said no. Nobody wants to help me. This dog's going to just screaming at me. And I listened to her, and I said, okay. I says, we'll cover it for you. And she kept yelling, and then she stopped herself, and she's like, did you just say you'll help?
That's right out of a cartoon, right?
Yeah.
They kept yelling.
Yeah.
And, already given
and
the
I'm
news.
Like, yes, ma'am. I said, make the appointment, and we'll let them know we're covering the cost.
And so did you just sort of make that decision yourself on the fly? Because otherwise, if I understand you correctly, prior to that call in that moment, it had just been food.
It was our intention to get to medical.
Okay.
We were
so it was part of the
funding.
Plan. You just weren't there yet.
We were working on funding.
Yeah.
We finally had enough funding that we could say yes.
So at that moment, you knew like you could cover
yes.
this difficult situation
yes.
this woman was upset about.
Yes.
That's great.
His story was actually featured in the new Barker magazine.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Cool.
So, yeah, it was quite heartwarming, you know, and it gave us the momentum to go further and more and bigger.
Yeah. And if I'm not mistaken, just because it seems important to the story in some, well, various ways, actually. So this, I think, as I even mentioned, Community Pet Project is all volunteer.
Correct.
So whatever monies are coming in, like you're executive director, but unlike a lot of organizations, you're not drawing a salary. That
I probably lose money.
Yeah, I'm guessing, yeah. So what do you do otherwise day to day to pay the bills?
Me personally?
Yeah.
I work a full-time job at Publix.
Okay.
I've been with them almost 20 years.
Wow, cool.
Yeah.
So you just sort of schedule around your Publix schedule.
Yeah, I work really early mornings, so I have the majority of the day left to,
that's great.
To do what I need to do.
Yeah, and everybody has probably similar stories that's
yeah.
part of the Community Pet Project.
Yeah.
Because again, no one's taking a cent. It's strictly all volunteer. And is
yes.
that was there a point early on amongst these 7 years where people thought, should we shift this in any way? Should we?
Absolutely adjust? Not.
Right, just like because we want all the money to
yep.
go to resources,
it's all about the
food
animals.
And medical care and et cetera.
Yep.
That's great. Wow. Let's talk about some of the services Community Pet Project offers. So one I imagine is kind of fundamental and probably has been because it's labeled food bank. So I assume that's probably just what it sounds like. But how does it work? I mean, how long is someone provided food that needs food? And how what's involved? Like, there's only so much food probably you have access to, although I'm sure that amount has grown significantly over the years. But, like, there's always more people who need food.
Yeah.
So are you? At what point are you able to say, well, yeah, we can add this and this and this, but we're tapped out for now to add these and these people that we'd like to add as well? I mean, how's the logistics of that work?
So the food bank was established as a result of COVID.
Right.
We were seeing all of these wonderful pet owners losing their jobs. You know, most were in the entertainment industry, and they were losing their jobs because the entertainment industry shut down in the Tampa area, right? You know, because of COVID.
Sure.
So including restaurants and servers and all that other stuff. So
yeah.
People were surrendering their pets left and right. And my theory has always been, let's go back to the ABCs. Let's quit trying to reinvent the wheel, but let's go back to the ABCs and see what we've missed. So why are these people surrendering their pets? 90% of them were saying it was because they didn't have access to food anymore. They had to prioritize where their extra money went to. It couldn't go to their pets. Okay, fine. We'll create a food pantry. Now you can keep your pets.
I love the casual can-do nature of this, which I'm sure does not address all the incredible work and effort and fundraising and stuff behind the scenes that enables you to be so casual about saying, yeah, we can help you or we can take
I have my moments of freaking out.
Okay. Well, right now it seems like nothing anybody could throw
because
at you.
Because it was successful. We were able
yeah.
to do it and it was successful. So we've kept the food bank going since March of 2020.
So even though the pandemic has largely receded, it still functions as it was functioning During the pandemic?
Yeah, we deliver twice a month. We have deliveries go out every other weekend. You, if you're eligible for our services, you receive food for 12 times. It doesn't have to be consecutive months. If you're doing really bad this month, but next month you're great, you don't need help, you can postpone it till the next month. But after you've received our services for 12 times, then for you to request food again, you need to, we need to approach the board and see if your story is something that the board can approve you for extra food.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you get 12. You get a year's worth of food.
Well, yeah, it seems incredibly, you know, reasonable and helpful, and probably gets people over a crisis point, and then hopefully.
And we
back
provide about a month's worth of food each time we deliver.
That's great. Yeah. So on those occasions where people are seeking beyond that 12, is it sort of depending on the approval? I guess they're sort of getting back in line effectively to get more
in
help.
In all honesty, we haven't had anyone come back after the 12.
Oh, really?
That
does the trick, so to speak?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's great. It must be really gratifying to know, like, this many people have come through your doors, and it takes that kind of help, which is significant, obviously, especially for someone who's struggling with all the things you've described.
Correct.
And alluded to. But it sounds like that really does serve the need that they have to get up on their feet again and get their pets fed in the meantime and get back going and functioning more fully. So that's fantastic. Wow.
Yep.
And is there, like, paperwork and stuff to submit for someone to qualify for those 12 times of food?
Yeah, it's real simple.
Yeah.
But you just need to email us. We send you a form asking name, address, phone number, of course, the ages and weights and sizes of your pets, because we're not going to provide 50 pounds of big dog food for a 5-pound chihuahua.
Sure. Has to be calibrated kind of for
the
need.
Yeah, so we kind of have to know what you have.
Yeah.
We do ask if the pets are spayed or neutered. If they're not, we'll help you do that, because another part of us, our mission is to reduce the pet population.
Sure.
If they qualify for our food, they qualify for the county voucher.
Okay.
So we can get them, and we'll cover the copay, so we can get those animals, up to 9 animals per residency, resident, spayed or neutered for $10 with a rabies vaccination and the county tag for $10 per pet.
Wow.
And if you can't afford
it's
that.
It's good to know people.
Huh?
It's good to know
no,
people.
No, that's the county voucher.
No, but I mean, a lot of people wouldn't be aware of that, probably. That,
oh, yeah. Yeah, a lot of people aren't aware of it.
Yeah.
So we just pay the $10, and if they can't afford the $10, we pay the $10 copay, and now we've reduced pet population.
Right. So it sounds like it's not really conditional in the negative sense, but it's sort of just part of the deal that if they're going to get food, and if they're not spayed or neutered, they're going to be spayed or neutered as part of the whole.
We don't require them to spay or neuter if they're just asking for food.
Could they resist it?
We're highly recommending it, yes. When it comes to the medical, if we're going to cover $500, our medical program is up to $500 per pet per year. If we're going to cover that $500, then your pet will be spayed or neutered.
I see. So it is required at that point.
Because a lot of the surgeries that we're covering, because with that $500, includes the option to just spay or neuter while they're in there and reduce a second surgery.
So why not? And what on those rare occasions where you find somebody resistant to spay or neuter, what tends to be their reasoning? Wow, I guess that's a long story.
They want their female to experience the joy of motherhood.
I see. Okay.
They don't want their male to lose their manliness.
I see. Okay.
Yeah, those are the two big ones.
All right. Well, and how often can, with a reasonable explanation, can they be turned around on one or both of those issues? Or are those the kind of cases where you say, all right, we're going to still give you the food. We really wish you would spay or neuter, but it sounds like you're really resistant to that, and so here you go anyway.
To turn them around to spay and neuter?
Well, it sounds like sometimes they can't be turned around if they have that kind of fundamental.
But to turn them around, we do have some very graphic photographs of what happens to females. Like, they get pyometra, and that's an infection in the uterus that's deadly.
Mm.
And the pictures are disgusting. And thanks to Harmony Vet Care, they have posted a lot of pictures on their Facebook page. So, to use that, and we can tell people to look at that. Look, this is what your female dog's going to go through. This is the pain and the surgery, and this is what's growing inside of her because you're refusing to do this.
Wow.
So
that's got to be pretty persuasive, I'm guessing.
We have some graphic pictures that we share, and that they don't realize. A lot of people don't realize. They think that we're just asking them to spay or neuter because of the pet reduction, but it's also medically needed. It's that surgery for that female with pyometra would probably cost $25,000 to $3,000.
Oh my goodness! Yeah.
The male can get testicular cancer. That's a very expensive surgery.
Yeah.
So
you're anticipating
when you explain the medical reason, not the pet population reason, then a lot of them will sway to do that.
Yeah, because I'm sure the people that you gave me the examples of why they were resistant, reducing the pet population isn't going to sway them. But some of those graphic pictures and/or the explanations probably will sway them.
Yeah, and what we'll do, what I've done, is if I have a female dog and the owner is refusing to spay her because they want to have one of her puppies to carry on her legacy,
right.
I tell them if they spay that female, I will personally go to the shelter with them and pay the adoption fee so that they can adopt a puppy from there. That puppy is already spayed, already microchipped, already vaccinated. They get the puppy that they think they need, and we still save the mom.
You're good, Rhonda. You're very good. You sound like you've heard every story and figured out a response for it.
We have.
Yeah. No, that's great. Again, this is Talking Animals on WNF. My guest is Rhonda Eldridge, Executive Director of the Community Pet Project, which, if you just tuned in, you can probably gather, provides all kinds of help and food and resources, medical and other, to homeless and at-risk communities throughout Hillsborough County. So if you do have a question for Ron about how things work, or just any experiences or stories, or just like to offer a comment yourself, please call 813-239-9663. Email dj@wmnf.org or text 813-433-0885. And at any point over these 6-7 years, was there a consideration ever given to expanding beyond Hillsborough County? It seems like it's very specific to Hillsborough County and always has been.
It has always been. We have talked about expanding. We just don't have the finances to expand.
Yeah, because it sounds like you probably put some of the things you're able to do at jeopardy just because you'd have to spread some of those resources out.
Correct.
Further. Yeah. Okay.
We have tried. We've had other states call us and ask us how we do what we do.
Yeah, probably a model, I would guess, for a lot of places, right?
What you do? Texas has called, Maryland, Georgia, a couple counties in Florida. So the people that have heard about us have called to ask how we've done what we've done. And in all honesty, I don't have that answer. All I can say is by the grace of God, because we didn't plan. All we planned for was to go to outreaches. That's all we planned for.
Yeah, but each thing has kind of spun you further along. And
correct.
Like, here's a new need that we've identified.
Correct.
Or here's a need that we already had identified, but now we have the money to pay for it, which we didn't have previously, et cetera.
7 years ago, I didn't expect to see Community Pet Project where it is today.
No, but that's so great because, again, like you say, you're doing kind of, you know, by the grace of God kind of work and helping so many people. And I'd be curious, of those different states and entities that have called to say, hey, how do you do this? We need to sort of kind of steal your playbook or whatever.
They can have it.
Yeah, but I'd be curious to know, are you aware of how many of those have implemented a program?
I have not. I haven't followed up with anybody. Yeah. I'm too busy
doing your thing. Yeah, for sure. That makes sense. So we've kind of, in some ways, talked about this, but another thing that's called at least veterinary financial assistance. How does that work? Who qualifies for that, and what's the criteria for...
We've made the criteria very easy. If you qualify for the Hillsborough County voucher, which means receiving any kind of government assistance, you qualify for the medical.
Okay.
Okay.
So it's not even a separate application thing. It's like, if you're already covered under the Hillsborough County voucher program, then we'll help you over here as well.
Correct.
Wow. That's great.
And it's $500 per pet per month or per year. And our community, our supporters, are the most generous people I've ever met. When we put out there, if it's a $1,200 bill and all we can pay is $500, and the lady has exhausted every opportunity, and we're $700 short, we just put a plea out on Facebook page, and usually within 24 hours... we'll have that money.
Yeah.
And I've had veterinarian clinics And I tell them, we're raising the money. Well, it's an emergency surgery, but we're raising the money. And they go on there and they see how well we're doing at raising the money. They'll do the surgery and trust us to raise the rest of the money.
Oh, they'll say, look, they're going to make it.
Yeah.
But this animal needs this now.
Yeah.
So let's do the surgery.
Harmony Vet Care has done that a couple of times, and that's instrumental in saving that animal's life.
That's great. Yeah. Well, I'm sure the people that now have heard about your story and have seen specific stories over the years are probably, like the veterinary people and many others, are probably saying, these people are like a godsend and we want to help them. And probably people are looking for opportunities to help or donate or volunteer. So I'm going to come back to that in a sec, because I'm sure that's the case. And, you know, I practically want to sign over the deed to my house at this point, just talking to you this long. But so what's fleece for the fur babies? That kind of caught my eye as well.
So we had students, apparently students in middle school now also have to get community volunteer hours. And it used to be, you know, just high school students where they could go into shelters and play with dogs and all that stuff. But the younger kids can't really go into places and do things. So I will never tell a volunteer no. I think that as a volunteer, if I would have ever been told, no, we don't need you, I don't know if I ever would have volunteered again.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to do that to a child.
Weird response.
They're our future.
Yeah,
I'm not going to put that in their head that they're not needed.
Yeah, there's the next Rhonda's eventually, right?
I hope better.
Well, no, but I just mean that, like, if they're cultivated in that way and they're already inclined to do it, not just for hours, but because they're drawn
right.
to animals and their plight.
Right.
I mean, you want to really develop those people and give them chances, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So what we created was Fleece for the Fur Babies, which is a no-sew fleece blanket. You don't have to sew it. You just cut the fringe and you tie knots, and it's a double-sided fleece blanket. So we give that to the homeless so they have blankets for their dogs.
Great.
If they need a bigger blanket, they can just untie the sides and they have twice the size blanket. If
wow.
they, you know, if they need to cover them up or something. So the volunteers do that, and they...
So the volunteers are actually piecing this together and kind of making the fleece
I have blankets. A middle school student right now that just started with us, and she's so excited she can't wait to drop them off and show them to us.
Well, that's great. How many is she going to drop off? How many would they make it?
Oh, my gosh. I don't know what she's going to drop off, but we've had probably close to 200 blankets made.
Wow. Since the program mm-hmm. began? Wow.
And then some guys don't want to sew, even though it's no sew.
Yeah.
We created snuffle mat. Well, we didn't create snuffle mats. Snuffle mats are created, but we created that as well as a volunteer opportunity, where you take a mat and you tie pieces of fleece on it so it looks like a shag carpet.
Oh, okay.
And you drop treats and snacks in there, and it makes the animal forage for their food.
Oh, okay, a little
which
bit
is
of
an
enrichment
tool.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, we give that to the homeless, because these guys are just hanging out on the street corner doing absolutely nothing. They can't play catch. They can't run in the park.
Very limited. Yeah.
So we give that away to them. So they've created about 400 snuffle mats.
Wow. Very cool.
Yeah, we had a Girl Scout troop or a Boy Scout troop, I can't remember which, in Plant City, that used that as their project 1 month.
That is great. And we're going to get into some other aspects in a sec of the community pet project, but I also, I guess, want to ask a little bit briefly about Warrior Cats of Hillsborough. Because that also has an intriguing name.
Warrior Cats of Hillsborough was recently created a year or so ago, I guess, a little over a year ago. We work very closely with the VA, and they'll call us and say, we have a veteran that's in need of XYZ. If a veteran or first responder for our case needs to go into the hospital for medical or mental health, or they'll forego having that mental health or that medical help done because there's no place to put their dog or their cat.
Mm.
We have a new 501c3 in Plant City called Chad's Promise, who will take the dogs. He also has a training facility out there, but he takes in veterans' dogs while the veterans are getting services. So the VA is like, Rhonda, what are we going to do? There's people with cats. They're not getting services because they don't know where to go with their cat. I'm like, okay. So the next day we created Warrior Cats of Hillsborough, which is, sorry.
No, it doesn't surprise me at all. It's like, okay, there's a problem. The next day we have a solution. That's the way we roll.
I reached out to a nationwide organization that fosters for vets. They were willing to share all their documents with me, how they run the program. They gave me their blueprint, and I took it and created Warrior Cats of Hillsborough. So we've only had two cats in our program so far, but the one we just had, I personally fostered her. Sweetheart, her daddy had to have back and neck surgery.
Oh, wow. And pretty extensive then.
She stayed with me for a month, and she was the sweetest thing ever. So
that's great.
Yeah, and he was happy to go. We didn't know, but the cat was actually alone in the apartment for 6 days before his aunt was able to get a hold of us to let us know that they needed help.
Oh, wow.
So she was only 10 minutes from me. I ran over, got the cat, and just returned her a week or two ago.
That's so great. He must have been so thrilled.
Yeah,
to see
he
that
was
cat.
Very happy to come home to his baby.
That helps his recovery, no doubt. So that's great. All right. So I'm sure many people hearing about your work and the kind of assistance you're offering and keep improvising along the way to provide more and different kinds of assistance.
Everything we do or create is a response to the need in our community.
Yeah. No, it sure sounds like it. And it's just like, it also seems like it's instantaneous. Like, okay, there's no place for this cat to go. Okay, this is Tuesday. Wednesday, we're going to have a solution. But seriously, that's so important because so many people have like dire situations where you can't take 2 weeks as like problem solved or whatever. You got to like help them now.
I'm not a patient person, so
that's great. Well, that's a huge asset, obviously, in this case, so that's great. So again, I think people hearing about this and just are probably really taken and moved, and they're probably thinking, how can I help? I'd like to donate, or I'd like to volunteer, or I'd like to do this, I'd like to help out. So how do people donate? I assume the website is probably pivotal for that.
Yeah, the website, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, we're on almost every social media.
And you can donate at each of those pages or just on the website?
Or you can donate on Facebook and website.
Okay. So a website we should point out is communitypetproject.org.
Correct.
And then you can just search for those things to find social media pages, counterparts to those, the Facebook, et cetera.
Yeah, and there's a donate button there.
Yeah. Well, that seems great.
We found out that we were on the Chewy pet food.
Okay.
We were actually on their list. So if you have pet food and your pet passes, you can go on to Chewy's list and find out where you can donate their food to.
Oh, wow.
And we didn't even know we were on the list. Some lady called and said, I saw your name on the Chewy list. Can I bring you the food? Because we will take open bags of food.
Oh, that's great. That's pretty rare, I think.
And we'll take all the used toy. I just had this guy, and he left me a picture of his dog that passed away. I'm like, seriously?
Oh,
it was
tough.
Sitting on my front porch, but he brought everything. He brought her food, her toys, her blankets, her bed, her crate, everything.
Wow. And those can just be repurposed where a lot of organizations wouldn't take some of those things if they're open or used or whatever, and they're missing out on ways to help that many more people.
Yeah. And then, you know, when we find the right person to take his cat stuff, we will make a post saying that in memory of this cat, we were able to give, and we're going to give it all in one thing. So it's, you know, same. So all of her stuff.
So it's not parceled out. It's just going to that one animal. I gotcha. But we're sort of nearing the end of our time, Rhonda. So
can I just add, we have a new program that you probably haven't seen.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, that's fine. Lay it on me. I'm sure it started yesterday. In need of us thinking of the day before. So,
It is so hot in Florida right now.
Oh.
Record heat.
Yeah, that's for sure.
So these poor animals, these dogs that are walking on the concrete are burning their pads.
Oh, right.
And these pads, if it's burnt bad enough, have to have medical care. So it's cheaper for us to furnish booties to these dogs than it is to pay for a medical bill.
For sure.
So we have a new program called Save the Pawpaws.
Okay.
Where we are trying to get donations and sponsors for pet booties so that we can distribute them with the dog houses that we've also created. We created a dog house project where anybody in Hillsborough County that's been getting citations from animal control or, you know, in response to animal control checking on them that they needed dog houses, we're giving out dog houses. We do a community build. We give them, ACO takes them out when they need to. We've donated 25 in the last two years.
Wow, that's so great.
So we're going to, once we start getting the booties in, we'll give them to animal control. So when they see them, because they're everywhere. So when they see the dogs walking on the street on
they
the hot concrete,
and say,
they can give
them
a pair of booties.
That's great.
So that's our new program. So we're looking for donations or sponsors to purchase enough booties.
And again, let's remind people listening that the website is communitypetproject.org. That's where you can donate or contact if you have inquiries about donations or materials or any ways that you might help any or all of these programs that we've been talking about, because we are just about at the end of our time, unfortunately. So let me ask you this. Are there ways to quantify your assistance? I mean, it's probably inherently tricky, but, you know, like we helped X number of families this month or this year. How does that work?
We are tracking it. Last month, we spent $1,300 on medical bills, and we covered $421 in euthanasia fees. In the last seven years, we have helped over 4,500 pets with either food or medical.
Wow, that's great. So it's not necessarily broken down by like...
It is. Oh, okay. I just don't have that. Okay. I just know the
but
totals.
That's still a big...
But we are tracking it.
Yeah, no, that's great.
The first year of COVID, we did get a grant from Brawny Paper Towels as the Brawny, they were called Brawny Hero Initiative.
Oh, okay.
When they were looking for people to...
That's probably a much used item.
Well, we don't have the pets.
Yeah.
But we dispersed some to Golden Ears, which you did a story on not too long ago.
Yeah, they were on the show a bit ago.
We gave her a case or two of paper towels. We've given them some to other rescues and stuff. But they gave us a donation of $10,000. That year alone, we spent $40,000 in medical bills.
Wow.
Because of COVID and loss of income.
Well, again, all the more for people to think about donating dollars if they can, materials if they can, anything that could help the Community Pet Project do what it does. So, Rhonda, we have, unfortunately, reached the end of our time now, but it's the Community Pet Project, communitypetproject.org. I've been speaking with Rhonda Eldridge. And thanks for coming in, and thanks for all the amazing work you've done on behalf of our animal friends for many, many years now. And
thanks for having us. We appreciate being here.
For sure. So keep up the good work, needless to say, and let's hope that this conversation may have spurred some additional help, donations or food donations or anything else. So in a moment, I'll speak with award-winning vegan chef, educator, and author Mark Reinfeld about some educational opportunities he'll be offering this summer, including the first classes he's taught in person in many years. More when we speak with Mark in just a moment here on Talking Animals on WMNF. In the meantime, we're stepping into the Comedy Corner with a comic who's become a Talking Animals favorite, Joe Zimmerman. This is part of his piece called Pet Snakes from Joe Zimmerman, today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals on WMNF.
I have a phobia of snakes. That's normal. It's weird that people have pet snakes when there's so many fluffy pet options available. How does that go? You want the puppy? Wants to be your best friend. It's a rescue. Or you could get the cold-blooded reptile that's banging its head against the glass. Sure looks like it hates you. It's the opposite of a rescue. It's an attack. It's actually what we rescued the rescue from, so... That's why we keep them separated. With bulletproof glass. Oh, you want more information on the limbless serpent? That surprises me. Let's see. I know it has infrared vision like the Predator monster. And it's been the symbol for evil since the beginning of time. Which seems like a red flag.
That was Joe Zimmerman in today's Comedy Corner with part of a piece called Pet Snakes, taken from his album Smiling at Wolves. Now it's time to speak with Mark Reinfeld, the award-winning vegan chef, educator, and author, and guest on this show many times over the years about new classes he's offering and other new developments from his Colorado headquarters. Here's Mark Reinfeld back on Talking Animals on WMNF. Good morning, Mark.
Hey, Duncan, it's so great to hear from you again.
Oh, great to have you back on the show and jump right into some things so we make sure we can cover everything that at least I've hopefully set out to do. So let's get caught up on new developments from your headquarters there. So these in-person classes that I guess are coming up momentarily almost, give me the details on those. Why so long, first of all, since you last taught cooking classes in person, and why did you decide to do it again now?
Well, as you know, COVID kind of was a pause in the action for most people. And
Sure. Most
of my trainings now I've been doing virtually. And I love the virtual format. It could reach people from all over the world. I've had people from Turkey and Nicaragua attend my four-week training. And That would never happen in the in-person format. I was approached by the local hospital here in Boulder, Boulder Community Health, which is a wonderful lifestyle-oriented hospital system. Through their cardiology department, we came up with three heart-healthy cooking classes. So it's in the Boulder area for people who are, it's going to be pretty much beginner level, people that are interested in including more plants in their diet to help prevent and reverse heart disease, which, as you know, is one of the big killers of our society and, in many cases, an easy fix by adopting a plant-based diet, whole foods plant-based diet.
And that's so great to hear that a local hospital has kind of made that kind of a focus of a program, just because one of the things we've talked about many times over the years on this show is how hospitals and other medical settings don't have diets. Their food service does not reflect any of the things you just mentioned, and it just seems like it'd be a relatively simple adjustment, especially in the cardiology department, but even just more generally than that. So it's just nice to hear that someone's kind of following that path.
Yes, I'm very excited, and hopefully it'll lead to more opportunities to educate people in the hospital system, both patients and doctors, on the amazing results that people receive when they embrace a plant-based diet.
For sure. So later this summer, I guess around mid-August or so, you're offering a new four-week vegan cooking immersion. So maybe you could describe that. And in this case, will that be available as a virtual course?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yes. So that is my signature program now. I believe this will be the eighth time I offered it. It's a four-week deep dive for anyone interested in learning the basic techniques of vegan and raw food preparation. No prior culinary experiences required, though I have people who have experience take the class as well. It's very comprehensive. We do 4 hours a day of live kitchen time together via Zoom.
Wow.
And we cover everything from bread baking, desserts, plant-based cheeses, plant proteins. We make our own seitan, our own vegan cheeses. We do soup, salads, dressings, handhelds, you name it. And I keep the class size small, and I do one-on-one coaching with students. So a lot of students who are interested in maybe going to culinary school but don't want to make that big commitment, or they're not sure if they want to allocate the time or resources for a full culinary program, I work with them one-on-one to really tailor the program to meet their needs and help them if they do want to enter the professional vegan culinary world. We have sessions where I could help sort through options and come up with game plans and strategies for them.
So this helps those folks kind of decide, like, do I or don't I? And if I do, which path should I maybe take?
Yes, and in many cases, actually, people find it's a very comprehensive course. It's over 700 pages of training materials.
Wow.
Many, many recipes. So people find, actually, that this is enough of a training for them.
Sure.
To take their next step, whether it's they want to, if they're a health coach and they want to add a cooking component, I've had registered dietitians, a lot of people making midlife career changes. So it's really a wonderful format.
That's great. And I think that one of the things that goes with that that I think I read about is there is a $1,000 scholarship available for this round of the cooking immersion. So how does someone qualify for that?
I just do it by need based.
Okay.
Actually, I would do an extra $500 on top of that for any of your listeners, so they could they mention the legendary Duncan, then give them that extra discount as well.
If they say the phrase "the legendary Duncan," they may need a different kind of help than the financial assistance, but that's a whole other conversation. But so let me ask you this, Mark, because I was thinking about this. I know we were going to mainly talk about the in-person classes you're teaching and, of course, the immersion class. But are there archived classes from all those virtual classes you have taught that people can register for and access kind of at will?
Actually, that's a great question. I'm in the process of putting those classes up online. So I believe you've had me on where I talked about it's a six-part Nourish Your Life Through Food program that I did with my wife, Ashley Boudet. We did one on diabetes reversal, one on cancer survivorship and remission. So I also have my teacher training that I do that helps people who want to teach cooking classes in their community. All those will be available within the next a month or so. And also, we didn't put it out there yet, but if the first time I was on your show, I believe, was for our first book, Vegan Fusion World Cuisine, and we're actually about to release our 20th anniversary collector's edition version of that book. So I'll be keeping everyone posted through the newsletter on that.
Oh, that's great, because that already kind of anticipates a question I was going to ask, just because you are a prolific author of books, cookbooks, and other books as well. So I was wondering if there was a new book or a new edition in the works, and there you go with announcing that before I even asked the question. So that sounds exciting.
We've done the mind meld.
That's for sure. So I guess we should note that the website, for later when those other classes will be made available and things that are available now, to find out more about the things we have discussed, that would be Chef Mark Reinfeld, reinfeld.com, right, is the website to go for that?
Correct. That's the current website, chefmarkreinfeld.com. We are in the process of redoing the old Vegan Fusion website,
okay,
which will be up again soon. But for right now, chefmarkreinfeld.com is the best way to get in touch.
To get in touch, and also presumably to register for the classes we've talked about if people are interested in going further.
Yes, definitely.
That's great. So lastly, Mark, what's your favorite dish? Just give me this a 5-second answer if you could. What's your favorite dish to prepare?
Well, I've talked about it before. It's a humble answer, but it's what I call a monk bowl, which is like a green, and a protein.
So okay.
Different types of veggies, different grains, different sauces. Chimichurri sauce is a great sauce for the summer to have in your bowls. It's like a zesty Argentinian sauce.
For sure. Well, very cool. All right, Mark. Well, thanks. Thanks for making the time to join us again on Talking Animals.
And
hopefully we'll see some people in your virtual class, if not your in-person class. Thanks again, and good luck to you.
That would be wonderful.
Have a great summer.
Thank you, Duncan.
Thank you.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right, we have reached about the end of today's edition of Talking Animals. Slice of Life is up next. After that, it's Jim Bannon, and then followed by Nancy C. It's Talking Animals.